Welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today we'll have Nathan Schmuck sitting in the chair usually occupied by Glenn Quatermain. We'll take a look at Fremantle's stunning upset of Geelong and what that means for Ross Lyon and the Dockers. We'll ask the question, which Liam Ryan mark was better, the one against Melbourne or the with the flight of the ball effort against Carlton at the weekend? And we'll also talk about all the other ins and outs and ramifications of an eventful round 20 in the AFL.
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. It is Tuesday, and that means it's time for the first edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast, except... We do not have Quarters. Quarters is off sunning himself somewhere, no doubt drinking way too much Corona. So instead, we've got looky, here comes Schmucky. Nathan Schmuck, highly respected writer, formerly of AFL.com.au, now working for the West Australian's digital crew. Nathan, how are you going?
Very well, Duff. Long-time listener and first-time contributor, so very good, very excited.
We're very happy to have you, mate. Now, normally, for listeners out there, if we're doing the AFL 360 analogy, we are more Mark Robinson than Jared Waitley. We're more sort of... A very little amount of preparation and sort of a bit of winging it as we go. But Nathan's presented me with a full rundown of what we're going to be talking about. I feel a bit intimidated, actually. It's like there's a basically a blow-by-blow account of how this is going to run. So I'm very impressed, and he may be doing this every week from now on in. We're brought to you by Tab Touch. Schmucky, it was a big weekend of fixtures. We are very much alive as far as who gets into the bottom end of the eight, and we're very much alive as to who leads the ladder at the other end. What did you make of round 20?
Well, I loved the battle for seventh and eighth. I think that's really wide open now, and I find that exciting because there's some really good teams that on their day are capable of playing some excellent footy, and they're going to be jostling for seventh and eighth. Essendon left the door open, so... I find that a bit of a worry for them now and for John Worsfold. But that was the big thing out of the weekend for me. Geelong wobbled, which has been it's an obvious talking point early in the week. And the other contenders, they sort of held their ground and looked impressive without anyone making a massive statement. So it was a good weekend of footy.
So let's get back to the implications for the two local teams. Fremantle's effort, the 34-point win against Geelong, one out of the box. One we didn't see coming. How did it happen as far as you were concerned, and what does it mean, do you think, for the Dockers and Ross Lyon?
Yeah, well, if Ross Lyon coaches effort, I think he just had a magnificent day in the coach's box because that was a win that was really built on effort, I thought. We've just heard today that Aaron Sandilands spoke to the group pre-game and he told the players to lift. And when Aaron Sandilands speaks, the players listen. And you could really see that. I think the crowd, they definitely recognised that when the players were leaving the ground at halftime, at full-time. They could just see the effort, and it was really even performance as well from the Dockers, I thought. So a terrific win.
There was that moment in the second quarter, wasn't there? And I think this is when the crowd really got engaged. I think Croden kicked the two goals, but you could see around the ground, Fremantle really started crashing in. They started hitting hard at the contest, and Nathan Fyfe talked about it after the game, striking at the ball, all those within 20 metres. The crowd really responded to that, I think, and then the Dockers players fed off that. Interesting. Whenever you interview Aaron, he starts every answer by, yeah, look. So I wonder if he sort of like got all the blokes together and said, yeah, look. Now listen here, you blokes.
Yep. And when you ask him a question and he starts with the yeah, look, it can put you on your back feet, I reckon. And they would have had that impact on the players. Yeah, boys, yeah, look. And they would have thought, all right, Aaron's going to say something pretty serious here. So let's all listen in.
And when you're 211 centimetres and you're 120 kilos and you don't speak often and you choose to speak... You're a fair chance to get listened to, I reckon.
Yeah, and I just wonder if it was put up to that. If someone said, hey, Aaron, you're the man to get a rise out of the players today. Why don't you have a word to them? That would be interesting to know.
All right. Effort aside, the fact that they were able to do that with no tall forwards to speak of, and basically David Mundy played as a tall forward but didn't touch the ball much until after halftime. Mm. Sean Darcy played as a tall forward, but probably his greatest impact on the game was getting the ball on the deck for three or four second half goals for other players. What did you make of Ross's ability to be able to conjure 95 points out of that forward line?
Yeah, well, that might have been their second highest score for the season. Second or third, though, round one was a really big game, but it's been a long time since they've kicked a score like that this season. So I think it comes back to that effort, and 18 of the 22 laid three tackles or more. So that was a real commitment from the players to just surge the ball forward, get those turnovers in the forward half. The skill errors were still there. The missed handballs, some of the directionless kicking inside 50 was still there. But they overcame that by just cracking in really hard and bringing that effort. And, yeah, I think that's why they were able to kick that score. And I think Geelong really played into their hands as well. They muck around with the ball a hell of a lot in the back 50, Geelong. So that didn't help them, and they really needed to get some territory, Geelong, to be able to compete in the second half with the way Fremantle were playing.
So one man's meat is another man's poison. When you look at the Cats and you stack them up against Richmond, West Coast, GWS and Collingwood now, and Brisbane, I guess, are in that conversation now, the latter says Geelong can absolutely win. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think West Coast and Richmond are the two clear standouts still, and I think they made that mark on the weekend again. They just look so stable, so confident in the way they're playing. Geelong, it's been a bit of a running issue now, not just on the weekend, but for a few weeks in a row, and the question marks over how they're playing. I think Brisbane have got a real weapon. I think they've got speed. I think they've got the youthful exuberance that other teams don't have, and I think they've got skill. So on their day, I think they can beat anyone, Brisbane. And GWS is, I think, a really interesting team at the moment. So they didn't have a great win. They won by, I think, 2 points over the Sydney Swans. But they're just making some tweaks in the midfield. Toby Green, Zach Williams, they're doing some things that I think Leon Cameron would be very, very happy about in building that midfield depth when Kelly comes back as soon as this week or one more week out. Cornelio, it looks like he's going to be a long way away. And Callan Ward's obviously gone for the season. But they're doing some things in the midfield that make them a really interesting team for the finals.
And I reckon it doesn't hurt GWS for them to win those tight games. I mean, they've been a flighty team, haven't they? That's not to say they're not tough around the ball. They are. But when games have got close in the past, they've tended to let a few slip away, but to be able to hang on against Port Adelaide the previous week and to be able to hang on again against Sydney this week, you're right, they didn't play their best footy. They came perilously close to losing the game, but they didn't lose it. And yep. I think that adds a lot to keeping players calm in tight situations and in the sort of situations you're going to be in when you get into finals. I think that's going to be – that can help them. I'm just going to be interested to see which – where they are in the pecking order, 1, 2, 3, 4 or 5, come the end of round 23.
Yeah, right now, where would you place them in
order? I'm with you. I've got West Coast and Richmond as the two, I think, the picks of it. I don't know what to make of Brisbane because I think Brisbane's final series can go one of two ways, I reckon. They can get a home final and really get up and about and really spank someone and go all the way to a prelim. Or they could find the going pretty tough in the first final and then have to regroup for that second final. And once that happens, I reckon they might get to a prelim, but they won't get any further than that. So I don't know what to make of them. And GWS, I think they need a bit of luck in where they finish.
Yeah.
I reckon. If they make the four and they get a draw that isn't too – like no one wants to come to Perth to play West Coast, let's face it. That's not going to be a good outcome for anyone. But if GWS could somehow fluke a game against Geelong, whether it's in Sydney or in Geelong, I reckon that would be a good outcome for them, and I reckon that's one that could send them forward into a prelim at least.
Yeah, and we've been waiting a few years now. I think everyone really wants to see GWS on that big stage and see what they're capable of. So, yeah, I'll be definitely hoping that they can get there, and I think if they do have that nice run through the finals, get a lot of players back, I think they're definitely a team that can challenge West Coast or Richmond.
Okay, so let's go to the other end of the eight then. It's like a logjam, isn't it? It's an amazing finish to the season. Who do you fancy for eight spot? Adelaide is the incumbent at the moment, so it's theirs to lose, but they are coming to Perth to play West Coast this weekend.
Yep, so I was Port Adelaide last week. I saw Scott Lysett get dropped, and I thought, hang on, I don't like the way that looks, so I'm going to go with the Bulldogs. I tipped them to start a bit of a roll by beating Brisbane. Didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm back on Port Adelaide. They found a bit of a formula there, Laddams and Ryder in the ruck that they obviously like. I thought that Scott Lysett was maybe their best option in the ruck, some of the football that he's played this season.
Yep.
But I think on their day, Port Adelaide, they haven't got a long injury list either. So I do think that if they can get things up and rolling, string two or three of those wins together, that like they have produced, just not consistently, I think they might be the most dangerous team to sneak into seventh or eighth. And Essendon in seventh, I think they might just hang on, but they do look very shaky now. But Essendon and Port Adelaide for me.
They do. Essendon's an interesting one, isn't it? Because they've got a run home where there's no guaranteed wins. They got the Doggies. They play the Doggies this week, I think. Do they?
Ooh, the Doggies, I think they do. Yeah.
And then they've got Fremantle. They come to Perth to play Fremantle, which is, you know, based on what we saw at the weekend, is not going to be a given. And then I think they might have Collingwood in the last round, I reckon.
Okay. Yep.
So there are no gimmies there for the Bombers.
Yeah, regardless of who they're playing, I do remember looking at their fixture and thinking they don't have any guaranteed wins along the way. So they could easily go 0-3 from here if they don't produce their best, and that's a worry. But as far as Adelaide go, being the incumbent, I don't sort of see that they made a big statement. Tex Walker was brilliant with his four goals. But I still look at them and think, you know, if that hadn't happened, you know, where would Adelaide be? And their midfield has been a concern all season, looking a bit slow and just not as dynamic as some of the best midfields in the top eight. So they are a worry. And if they did make that eighth spot, I don't look at them as a team now that can go on and win a final.
I wonder whether Don Pike can do something to change the mix in the midfield. I know Mick Malthouse is big on this, where he talks about the Crouch brothers as players that accumulate without hurting and that they kick sideways a lot. I mean, Adelaide does have players who play with penetration, don't they?
Yep.
Brodie Smith plays with great penetration. Paul Seedsman.
Yep.
Plays with great penetration. I wonder if Don Pike can change the mix a little bit and get a little bit of outside run and players who will run straight at the goals and go long and straight and go in deep quickly and give players like Taylor Walker, and assuming that he hasn't had a hissy fit with Don Pike and gets back in the team, Josh Jenkins.
Yep.
There was a bit of a rumour that he did have a hissy fit and a bit of a fight with Don Pike. You know, give them a good look one-on-one, get the ball on the deck quickly so that Eddie Betts can go to work, and then maybe they become more dangerous. Because at the moment they look like a team. They look a bit like, I reckon, like West Coast looked in 2017, where they look a lot better on paper than they actually are in terms of output.
Yeah, and Rory Laird, if we do think about the back line as being an area where they can change things up and get that penetration, he found a bit of form on the weekend and he's, I guess, capable of being that anchor player in the back line and allowing Brodie Smith to be a real runoff player and get that penetration push up onto the wing. So I think, Brodie Smith is definitely a player who could be the key to them getting that pace that I think they desperately need.
Okay, let's move on to, we've got, obviously, North Melbourne won their first game with Reece Shaw officially confirmed as the coach for the next couple of years. Carlton, David Teague, is now 5-3. He's got a tough run home. How are you thinking he's placed in terms of getting the permanent job?
Well, he's got the player support, doesn't he? So Ed Curnow, I think, said this morning that he's playing for David Teague. He wants them to win so David Teague can get the job. So the players are being very overt in their support for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to have a real impact. And the longer it goes, the longer this great football that they're playing goes, the harder it's going to be for the Carlton board to make a different decision to David Teague, because they're going to have to think about what are the implications on our club and our players if we overlook this guy who is just so incredibly popular now and has had such an impact on a club that was really, under Brendan Bolton, it seemed to be going nowhere. And Brendan Bolton took over at a really tough time. He had to work through a really tough period with their list, their profile, but they didn't look to be going anywhere. That's why he was sacked. And David Teague's had an incredible impact. I just wonder if they didn't go with David Teague, what sort of impact is that going to have on the players?
Bit of sort of Paul Ruse at Sydney circa 2003, where the players want him so badly, you've got no choice but to go with him.
Exactly.
What did you make of them on the weekend? I thought they were okay. against West Coast, never quite good enough to really be in the game.
Yeah, and they were flattered on the scoreboard with that late run that they had, the percentage point that they took off West Coast, which was a bugbear for West Coast fans, I think, percentage being so important. But you're right, they were competitive. They made West Coast work for everything they got. But they just didn't have the class or the depth or the skill to really trouble West Coast at any point.
Yeah, I think West Coast always had them covered, didn't they? And once, I think Yeo went to Cripps in the second quarter. Once Yeo got a handle on Cripps and Cripps wasn't able to be that dominant figure that he so often is at Carlton, you just got the feeling that West Coast were gonna ease clear and win comfortably. And you're right, Carlton made a bit of a run at them late, but they were probably, in the end, I reckon, two goals closer probably than they were entitled to be over the course of the day.
Yeah. And what do you think that percentage point that they took off them? The Eagles are talking that percentage doesn't matter. We haven't locked down a top four spot yet. But that is important. Percentage at this time of year and the way the ladder is shaped at the moment is going to be so important. Do you think privately they would be talking about that, West Coast?
I think West Coast knows it's in their hands because if they win in, all the way in, they're going to be top two because Geelong and Brisbane have to play in Brisbane. Someone loses that game and West Coast will be able to leapfrog the loser of that game at least. Yep. Their percentage is very tight up against Brisbane's, isn't it? I think it's about one percentage point in it. But, provided West Coast win in all the way, I think they'll be top two. And from there, I mean, second is as good as first as far as West Coast is concerned.
Yep. Okay.
And I see, I'm going to be fascinated, not this weekend, but next weekend, West Coast goes to play Richmond at the MCG, and I'm going to be fascinating, it's going to be fascinating to see how much that game means to both teams, whether one team considers it a bit of a dead rubber and the other team gets up and beats them, because it may be a great pointer to the finals, or it may be a bit of a false dawn for the winner as well. So that's going to be, a fascinating one.
Absolutely.
Interesting sidelight. Obviously, the Tigers overcame a sluggish start to beat Melbourne on the weekend, but an interesting sidelight in the VFL. Marlon Pickett played his first game. And the Tigers are looking forward to this. You know, it was interesting to... I watched the video footage of this on the AFL website. There was a lot of cheering when he got around the ball in the first quarter. There was certainly massive cheering when he kicked his first goal for the Tigers. And just talking to a few of my mates who are Richmond supporters, who heard about this guy from South Fremantle, 27-year-old, and they saw his highlights package for South Fremantle, and they went, wow. Because he is a beautiful mover, Marlon Pickett. He played a really solid game. Drew some comment from Damien Hardwick and Craig McRae, their VFL coach, afterwards. So he's got his work cut out to push his way into that senior team. When you look at, you know, they've managed to resurrect their mid-season injuries. They now look a pretty healthy team, Richmond. So there's a lot of players vying for selection. But wouldn't you just love to see Marlon Pickett bob up around finals time?
Yeah, and it was a really clever pickup from Richmond, and it had a lot of long-term planning about it, not a lot of short-term about it, I thought, that pickup. But, if he could come in and have an impact, that would be outstanding for them. And the bottom end of their 22 that they're fielding at the moment, there is room for a player like him to come in and really lift that team, I think, and improve them. So that will be a very interesting watch for their selection over the next few weeks.
Right, the Pies got a bit of a season steadier against Gold Coast. It seems like everyone steadies their season against Gold Coast these days. What did you make of Collingwood's form? Were you impressed, or did you think they did what they should have done against a team that's really looking for the end of the season now?
Yeah, absolutely did what they should have. Most impressive thing about Collingwood for me was Adam Treloar's form.
Yep.
I thought he was outstanding the way that he used the ball, which isn't normally something that we associate with Adam Treloar. So if he can continue that through, that's going to be a big boost for their midfield. And the other thing that came out of that game, it didn't look to be that serious immediately, but Mason Cox's eye injury,
yep,
it's going to rule him out for the season. I think that's going to put a lot of pressure. Even though he hasn't been outstanding, he's got his fans, he's got his detractors, but I think that's just going to put a lot of pressure on their other forwards to become marking targets when maybe they're not natural as being the number one forward. I'm thinking someone like a Brody Mychek might find that the pressure really ramps up on him in the final rounds.
So Mychek is a busy player, isn't he? And,
yeah.
And he bustles and he muscles around, but he does benefit from a couple of defenders gravitating towards Cox because they know how tall he is and they know what a threat he can be in the air. And Mychek is able to, just by bustling around, get good one-on-ones, get out the back, get the odd mark, kick his two or three goals a game. I think you're right. I think that it's going to be... it doesn't look like it based on Cox's form in recent weeks, but they're going to have to find a different way to go about it. And I think the other thing about it is that it again puts pressure on them not to be able to get to go into the midfield. And I think Stevenson, the loss of Stevenson, has done that. Obviously, they'll get him back for the finals. But the more time to go he spends forward, he's a great threat forward. Him and Dustin Martin, I think, are the two big field threats when they go forward. But the more time he's forward, the less time he's in the midfield. And obviously with some of the injuries they've had there, the more they're... we thought they were the deepest midfield, but the more their top-end quality in the midfield gets compromised, I reckon.
Yeah, and it's such an extreme injury list now. And this was a problem, I think, for Collingwood. Going back before these injuries hit, they still had their form struggles going back 7-8 weeks, and they haven't been able to consistently steady their season. They had that great win over here against West Coast on the weekend. They've had a big confidence boosting shot in the arm, but I think there's too many concerns now about Collingwood to think that they can really go deep in September.
Now, Schmucky, you've made a little note on my very comprehensive rundown I've got in front of me, that the Pies are offering Brody Grundy a 3-year contract. Now, Brody Grundy, if ever a ruckman is going to win the Brownlow, it could be Brody Grundy this year. And the little note you've left next to it, he deserves more.
Yeah.
Let's talk me through that.
Absolutely. I find Brody Grundy to be one of the most damaging players in the AFL. Can take a game by the scruff of the neck, not just in the ruck. He can get around the ground. He's got that, I guess, that shape, that build that he can run all day and he can mark and he can pick up a ground ball, win a clearance. I find it staggering that Collingwood is only offering that sort of player a 3-year deal at this point in his career. And with the noise around the Adelaide clubs looking at him and trying to find a bit of a crack in those negotiations, that to me, only offering a 3-year deal is a crack. And I think Collingwood really need to look at what they're offering Brody Grundy. I sound like his manager here, but I do find that concerning from Collingwood.
He has talked about wanting to go home and play in Adelaide at some point. Do you think maybe there's a tactic from Collingwood thinking, let's offer him a bit more, let's offer him a shorter deal, and let's leave the door open for him to maybe go back and play footy in Adelaide if he wants to? And the other thing I'm wondering, obviously what clubs sometimes do with these things is they look at their premiership window. Is Collingwood looking at their premiership window and thinking, if we haven't won in 3 years' time, maybe we're not going to win and we need to be looking at the next group of players coming through?
Yeah, and absolutely. And Brody Grundy, I guess if we look at his career and his trajectory in 3 years' time, he's still going to be a really valuable player for a team that's in its premiership window. So maybe you're right, they don't want to lock him in long-term and lose the ability to maybe deal him or get a free agency, you know, deal a draft pick coming back the other way, you know, later in his career. But I look at him and I think he's a player that you want at your club well into his 20s and his early 30s.
Schmucky, I'll ask you this one. Is West Coast better placed to defend their flag than they were to win it last year?
Ooh, I do think they are, and I think so, that has a lot to do with their midfield and some of the players they've found in their forward 50 and the way those players are working together.
Yep.
I think the midfield is definitely stronger. I think the improvement that's come out of players, Elliot Yeo seems a better player, and that's saying something for a best and fairest winner in a premiership year. And they haven't had massive injury issues. We look at Nick Natanui, they found a way to cover him. And yeah, I think the players in the forward 50 are really working tremendously well together.
They don't play a brand of footy that leads to a lot of injuries, do they?
Yeah.
It's not as physical and as brutal as, say, the way Fremantle would play. Interesting, Richmond tends to not attract a lot of injuries. They've had a few this year, but in the last 2 years they've had a blessed run with injury. You would think they play a pretty physical sort of a brand, but West Coast brand is very much ball movement. It's very much clean ball handling. I wouldn't say that they shy away from contests when they're there to be had, but they kind of lessen their need to play combat footy because they're so clean with the ball. And I think that helps in terms of the health of the list.
Yeah, and we watch, obviously, the two teams over here live each weekend on alternative weekends. And I think the way we see West Coast move the ball, it can be breathtaking. The kicks that they can hit,
yep.
That's going to, be a real factor going into finals. And they know what to do. They've been there, they've done it, so that's going to be a real factor too.
So one player who's obviously was there last year and is there again and is building a nice little highlights reel, Liam Ryan. Liam Ryan a better player this year than he was last year?
He is. He is, absolutely. And his mark on the weekend, I think, is something that we should definitely come to a conclusion on. Which mark was better? Do you think the big hang against the Demons, or do you put more stock in the courage required for what he did on the weekend?
I've got no doubt the mark he took on the weekend is the better mark. But I've also, I would say that the mark of the year judges will look at the one putting his boot stops on the back of Max Gawn's head,
yep,
early in the season. They'll probably say, well, that's the mark of the year. But I think when you're Liam Ryan's size and you're prepared to run with the flight of the ball with key forwards and key defenders coming the other way, like he did on the weekend against Carlton, I think that is the better mark, and that's the mark that will win you the respect and the plaudits of your teammates and your fans, I reckon.
Yep. I would love to have been at the game. I would love to have seen. I just know what my reaction would have been watching that live, because I know what my reaction was seeing him jump on top of Max Gawn, and that was breathtaking, that mark, and you could see it coming. You'd see the big looping run that he did, knowing what was going to be heading his way.
Yeah.
So for me, it was the high-flying grab, but it might have been a different answer if I'd been there at Marvel Stadium and seen what he did on the weekend.
So he's in ripping nick now, kicked four goals against Carlton. You don't want to be caught defending Liam Ryan deep one-on-one, do you? If you're a mid-sized defender, that is not a good matchup. Whether the ball's in the air or on the ground, he is exceptionally dangerous in that situation.
Yep, absolutely. Quick on the lead, and you know that if it's a ground ball that's going to be coming in, he might have you just covered for that. And if you give him any little bit of space, he's also got the skill to kick a goal from anywhere, really. So, yeah, it would be very nerve-wracking.
Before we close, let's talk about the Brisbane game when they beat the Bulldogs by 18 points. I'm a bit hot on the Dogs because I think it's a premiership midfield. It's two or three years on from being a premiership midfield, and I just wonder why there is still any doubt whatsoever in this team playing finals football. They were okay against Brisbane, and you were thinking they were going to get over the top of them and launch a run at the eight, but they didn't get there. What did it mean as far as you were concerned, as far as Brisbane's form goes and their top four credentials, and also what did you make of the Doggies' effort in the game?
Yeah, so I'll start with Brisbane, and the way they played, I thought they played ruthless footy for a young team. Their attack on the ball, their attack on the man, I thought that was something that I maybe hadn't given them enough credit for,
mm-hmm.
but really enjoyed watching it. I'd always focused on the skill of players like McCluggage. I thought that was, you know, their real advantage over teams. But now I look at the ruthless side as well, and I think they've got that. The Bulldogs, I don't think they can make the run now. I thought an upset over Brisbane could have been the start of something. It could have been the inspiration they needed to really get going. I like their best footy, but I don't think they're capable now of doing it. The one thing I will say for them, and this being a premiership type list and 2 years on from what they did in 2017, I think they've done really well at rebuilding on the run and bringing in players like English and Norton, and I don't see them going anywhere next year. I think they're still going to have a really strong list, but they should be playing better than they've played this year. They should have been more consistent than they've been this year, and it is going to be disappointing not to see them in finals.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen them fall in the bottom end of the eight. They're the team, I reckon, that I'll be most disappointed in if they don't get there. They are playing Essendon this week, by the way. I just looked it up in the fixtures, just yep. Made sure we didn't get that wrong. I mean, you know, Bontempelli's as good as any player in the comp. Norton is an emerging forward. I think their midfield is very strong. It's very deep. I accept that they'll be better at either end in the years to come. I think, you know, Norton will get better. They'll be able to put a second or third forward around him rather than having to worry about someone who's going to take the heat off him, which they're probably worried about at the moment. And down the other end, they're probably one really good tall defender away, aren't they? Yeah, they're pinch hitting a bit with Trengove. That works some weeks and it doesn't work other weeks. But with that midfield, to me, if I had that midfield running around, I'd want to be playing in September.
Yeah, so. No doubt. And Bontempelli, his third quarter, I guess, showcased again the class that he has as a player and a future Brownlow medalist.
His ability to find space at the centre stoppage, yeah. I just find fascinating. You know, the guy is, you know, arguably, he'd be one of the best five stoppage players in the comp. You know, he's got that Pendlebury ability to see where the ball's going a fraction of a second before everyone else sees it. And why you're not denying that guy space, I don't know. He always finds space. And he does those little hook runs. He'll run into where the traffic is and then he'll get out again and he'll be in space and he's just charging inside, attacking 50, virtually unopposed. That is pure genius, I reckon.
Yep. He's a football genius. And clubs probably need to, even off the back of hooking around off the defensive side of the wing, is probably something that clubs should be doing more against the Bulldogs, given how often he does that. But he had, what do you have? He had 13 of his 35 possessions. That's another one that I popped down on the rundown in that third quarter. So he was outstanding.
Okay, so where have you got? Have you got the Lions in your top four?
I do. Yep. So I've got GWS missing the top four, but I've got the Lions, and that could you know, work out anywhere. They could finish second. It could be third or fourth. But I've definitely got them making the top four, and I think West Coast are going to get that top two spot.
Yep.
And I think Geelong will hang on for top spot, but won't be anywhere near the best team in this final series.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're going to hang on now. I just get the feeling they could drop a couple more and then that will put them back at the bottom. I think they'll hang on to the top four for sure. But I get the feeling that West Coast and maybe Brisbane are going to get them before the end of the season. I tell you what, you wouldn't want to be going to the Gabba to play the Lions in that first week of the finals in a qualifying final.
Yep. And you wouldn't want, the other teams wouldn't want that happening either. They wouldn't want, if you're not playing Brisbane first week of the finals, you don't want to see Brisbane playing at home and winning first week either, because that is going to set them on a great run, I think, if Brisbane can do that.
Imagine the, big games over an extended period of time can wear players down, but the novelty of playing in those big games for those Brisbane players, I mean, they'll be generating so much excitement at the moment. And you talked about the hard edge that they showed against the Doggies on the weekend. A part of that is probably, you know, wow, how much fun is this? You know, we're pointed at the top end of the ladder. We could be in the chop up for a premiership at the end of the year. Let's go after it and let's really reach for the line.
Yep.
All right. Thank you very much for joining me today, Nathan. Thank you very much for joining us, listeners. We've been brought to you by Tab Touch, as I mentioned before. We'll be back on Thursday. Are you coming back in on Thursday, Schmookie?
You might have Braden Quartermain.
Braden Quartermain. So it'll be a Duff and Quarters podcast. It'll just be a different Quarters. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll try and tip you a winner for round 21. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again then.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.